Good afternoon. Can people in the back hear me okay? Just thumbs up, yeah? Okay, a bit louder. We've had a lot of trouble with the sound in the room. It's been a very long week. I'll try and speak as loudly as I can. The longer the session goes on, the quieter I'll probably get. So if you can't hear me at the back, you know, keep going like this to tell me to speak up. Good afternoon. Thanks for coming along to the very last session of the main show. It's good to see so many people still here wanting to know about user profile sync. I'm not quite sure why this is such a popular topic, because as you all know, it's very easy. Yep, that's my name. Contact details there if you want to follow up on anything after the conference. What we're going to talk about is just a very brief introduction to identity management as it applies to SharePoint 2013 and specifically user profile synchronization. We'll then briefly touch on the architecture, very high level, for user profile sync operations in SharePoint 2013. We'll look at how we provision things using Windows PowerShell. We'll look at the three different modes of getting user data into SharePoint that are available to us in this release of the product. And we should spend some time in a reasonably long-winded demonstration of the different modes and some PowerShell. So before we dive into some technical details, we always need to underline the importance of having an identity management strategy of some shape or form when we're dealing with solutions that rely upon the user profile service. And with SharePoint 2010, profiles were very important. With SharePoint 2013, they've become even more important, and that's going to remain the case for future iterations of the product, because more and more new features are fundamentally reliant on there being a user profile available in order to perform application authorization. Okay? Examples of things in this release, in the 2013 release, that simply do not work without a valid user profile with the correct data include the app model, server-to-server authentication, the work management service, and so on. Okay, so the importance of getting this right is increasing with every revision to the product. As far as identity management, the practice discipline, is concerned, it's predominantly a non-technical challenge. Right? The tooling, technology can help us achieve to realize the strategy, but there's also an awful lot of politics, et cetera, involved. I don't want to spend too long on this in terms of examples and so on and so forth, otherwise we won't have time to cover the rest of the material. So we're going to basically ignore this slide and focus on the 10% for the rest of this session. I mean, this is a technical conference after all. How many of you here, as well as sort of being responsible for your SharePoint farm, are also responsible for Active Directory? A few of you, okay. Hope you're getting paid twice. Yeah, is that the case? Yeah, not so much. Well, this is the key thing for those who didn't raise their hands, is that fundamentally, as much as you might not like those, AD guys, right, because they're, no disrespect, there's only a few of you, they're a bit weird, aren't they? Come on, if there isn't regular communications and a good relationship with the people responsible for managing the Active Directory or whichever other type of directory you have, that can make or break, that's going to break the deployment, basically. How many of you here deal with an outsourced provider for Active Directory? So you have to go through change control, so on and so forth. Yeah, it's getting more and more common. It's more common, actually, in European-based businesses than it is in American-based businesses, but it can be a big challenge. Just simple things like getting the right permissions on accounts and so on and so forth can often take, many weeks, and then you find out that it's been done on the wrong account or done on the wrong property and so on and so forth. We always used to kind of say this could make or break a large-scale social deployment. Well, it's nothing to do with social. It's anything that relies on profiles will be impacted by this. It's a little bit more true if you're leveraging SharePoint social capabilities, and indeed the Yammer side of things as we move forward, but only for the non-critical attributes of users, such as what their areas of expertise are and things like that. So that's why that's kind of got the strike through there, because it's not specific to social. It's for all of the things that we're working with here. Okay, let's have a brief look at the architecture of the user profile service in SharePoint 2013. And you know, what drove the changes, the small number of changes that there are in this release. In terms of, if we go back to the planning for the release, the iteration, if you like, there's a number of lessons from the field in terms of what the challenges were. Fundamentally, there is an inadequate understanding of the thing in general, and it's easily one of the most common causes of weak deployments or fixing it later and so on. Certainly, it causes a lot of upgrade pain, and the upgrade project ends up being also a project to kind of go back and fix up some problems on the previous deployment. We have to understand fundamentally there are some features available to us, and there's also some design constraints due to the way the UPA and its associated capabilities are implemented, which constrain what we can do with it. So some of the common points of difficulty, especially for large deployments, is whether we can or should federate the user profile service application across farms, or whether we need to think about, do we need to think about replicating user profile data across multiple environments? Do we have a central farm? Do we have regional farms? All of these kind of things. And there's also a relationship with other services in the product, which basically make, overall drive the complexity of the topology choices for the deployment. Just for my benefit, how many of you were in Victor Willen's session on practical farm topology earlier in the week? Nobody? Oh, a few of you, good. That session, if you weren't there, please check it out on the recording, because he does a very good job of articulating how many compromises we need to make and how to get to those in order to have a manageable and successful SharePoint 2013 farm. And UPA is obviously part of that. Inadequate planning is very common. There's not a lot we can do here, because fundamentally there's always going to be a large number of deployments that aren't planned out, because that's the nature of doing accelerated project delivery, right? We're never going to get it 100%, but this is some pretty important stuff if you think about what UPA is being used for. It's being used for application authorization. All right, so if we care about security, that's a pretty big deal. We've got to make sure that that's planned out appropriately. We also need to be increasingly cognizant of or aware of regulatory requirements around the protection of personally identifiable information. One of perhaps the most common examples in Europe is many organizations in certain sectors are prohibited by regional law. It's not acceptable to store the birth year of an individual, right? So you can store the birth day and the month, but not the year, because there's concerns that that could be used in terms of age discrimination. Those kind of things are extremely important. Then we have how we're going to manage the operational service of making sure that we're auditing those kind of things as well. Also need to consider the supporting infrastructure and related services. One of the biggest complaints about user profile sync specifically is it's too slow, okay? Now, I'm not going to stand up here and say UPS is fast, because it isn't, right? But it's not just UPS that's the problem, okay? It's all the other things that it relies upon. SQL Server, distributed cache, and the related service applications need to be appropriately implemented as well. So with those things in mind, the goals for the 2013 changes are around three key areas: performance, reliability, retaining the compatibility with directory systems that we had previously. So we want to be able to get to a situation where a large organization, and I know that term doesn't really mean anything, but let's say over 100,000 users, we should be able to perform a sync of those users in a significantly less time than we could with SharePoint 2010. Kind of targeting a couple of days rather than, in many cases, a couple of weeks, okay? Make it more reliable, give IT pros or infrastructure people more visibility of what's going on, easier troubleshooting, and better guidance, et cetera, and do both of those whilst retaining the broad compatibility across Microsoft and third-party directory services. They're not very lofty goals, right? It's a fix rather than a reinvention of the overall synchronization space. So in order to achieve that, we have different modes that we can choose with SharePoint 2013, or different approaches on how to get user information into the profile store. A new thing, or at least slightly semi-new, is Active Directory Import. This is an LDAP, or a lightweight LDAP approach to doing import. Now, the name is important. I've fielded literally thousands of customer inquiries that say, using Active Directory Import, can I write back data to Active Directory? Okay? No. It's not synchronization, it's not replication, it's a one-way import from Active Directory to SharePoint. And it only works in a supported fashion with Active Directory, right? You can't point this guy at eDirectory and have it bring the profiles in from there. This is kind of like what we had in SharePoint 2007, yeah, if you remember that. It's implemented differently, but it's basically the same core capability, and it's fast. Then we have user profile sync, which is what we had in SharePoint 2010 with a bunch of change, you know, fixes and updates. It's basically an embedded, restricted version of the Forefront Identity Manager product, which is a standalone product you can purchase and deploy in addition to SharePoint. And then we also introduced support for External Identity Manager. And what this means is you can use something external to SharePoint and not use user profile sync at all inside SharePoint, so decouple the sync operations from the SharePoint farm. There's two ways we can go down this road. The first one is to purchase and deploy the actual Forefront Identity Manager product and use a thing called the SharePoint connector for FIM, which is what used to be called a management agent, which will allow us to hook up to FIM, or we can build a custom code solution calling the user profile, web services, and object model. Okay? And therefore, it is possible to use third-party external identity managers from other vendors with additional customization. However, be very cautious with that because we're using the user profile, web services, so you will hit scale and performance implications there. So just quickly describe these or have a little architecture diagram because we have to have these diagrams, right? You can't give a presentation without one of these diagrams. In SharePoint, over on the left-hand side, we have the service application, which is really our point of configuration. It doesn't actually really do any work for us. We can just enjoy our time pointing and clicking around, the profile property mapping screen, for example, and have lots of fun in there with the wonderful UI. AD import, as the arrows here in purple suggest, allows us to do a one-way import from AD, and then it's available to and from the UPA. And then for UPS, the user profile sync capability, we can do import and export to Active Directory. We can do import from an external line of business system via BCS, and we can also speak to additional directory sources. So there's three other directory systems that we natively support as well, and we can do import-export from those. There is some still, unfortunately, inaccurate documentation out there that says we can only do import from the third-party directories. You can do import and export. The configuration to allow it is dependent on that directory system. We may have to make changes there in order to support it. An example would be Novell eDirectory. Out of the box, it won't work unless we make changes to the configuration of the directory. That's actually not any different than working with AD, because in order to get this working, we have to have special permissions for a particular account in Active Directory. So we are indeed making changes to AD in order to support the scenario. Then we have the FIM, the External Identity Manager, and in this case, using Forefront Identity Manager, and that means basically that we can do import and export to everything. Okay, whatever there's a connector for, whatever there's a management agent for, we can perform the full set of operations. And then finally, if we choose a custom code approach, we're limited only by the quality of our software development capability. Okay, so fairly straightforward, but which one do we use, right? That's the question, and we'll get to that towards the end of the session. So let's now, it's been a long week for the clicker, you have to be quite close. Let's now switch gears and talk about how we provision this stuff. So as you all know, we can use the farm configuration wizard and everything works perfectly, and you get all the names that you want for things and stuff and everything works, right? Yeah, sorry, that's, what it really should have been called is the I'm doing a single server demonstration tomorrow. Can you get me my farm ready wizard? Okay, that's what this guy's for. Or, I'm doing a single box SharePoint foundation. I just want to have a look around and see, what's this SharePoint stuff all about? Is it any good? That's what that's for. In the real world, we have to think about, doing things more in a sort of precision way, right? We want to specify things and have it configured the way we want it. Unfortunately, in the recent past, there hasn't been enough investment in the user interfaces to allow us to perform configuration. And in order to get things, the right way, for UPA, we can use managed service applications. Okay, we can do it through central administration. But there are limitations there that mean if we're looking to do provisioning in a productive way or to highly automate it, we're going to use Windows PowerShell for that. Okay? And certainly it's my preferred approach. But just because we're going to use Windows PowerShell for provisioning is not a good enough justification for it not being achievable using a user interface, because it's not black and white, right? Different people are in different scenarios. We must have the appropriate level of quality within the configuration user interfaces for products in the marketplace. But unfortunately, there's only so much time, and there hasn't been up recently enough investment in that area, so we hit these problems. Anyway, we want to use Windows PowerShell. If we do use Windows PowerShell to create the user profile service application, we will never, and we do it wrong, we will never be able to start user profile sync because of a thing called the default schema issue. Now, what this is all about is if we run new SP profile service application as any other account than the farm account, it will do it incorrectly, okay? And that will prevent us later on from being able to start user profile sync. And there is nothing you can do other than go back and deal with this default schema issue. So we want to work around this. So how do you do it? Well, you could log on interactively as the farm account onto the server, onto one of the servers in the farm, and run that PowerShell commandlet. Okay, and that will work. That was how it was tested, and it works just great. But the fundamental problem with this is we're logging on as a service account identity interactively onto the server. It's the single worst operational practice for managing SharePoint or any other distributed system based on Windows. You can also go into SQL Server and just manually make a change there, which will sort it out in a couple of seconds. That's unsupported, right? Sure, it works, but we shouldn't be doing that kind of thing, because if that's our solution for a customer, they're going to think, oh, yeah, well, it's okay to just go in SQL Server and fiddle around with settings, right? So if it's okay for this, it might be okay for something else, which could have disastrous consequences and lead to, spending a lot more money engaging product support to get them out of the jam. So we shouldn't be doing this. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. So a solution is to use or leverage non-SharePoint PowerShell commandlets that allow us to effectively simulate logging on as the farm account. So basically, we can use start process with the run as switch, or the run as parameter, I should say, to kind of simulate running as the farm account, run that commandlet, and then we're good. Two different approaches, really. How many of you here run UAC on your SharePoint farms? Just that few of you? All the rest of you turn that guy off? Okay, interesting. That's kind of scary. I understand why you turn it off, but I mean, UAC is a good feature, right? We need that kind of security in our server farms. Anyway, depending on whether you're using UAC or not, you know, you're going to use start process if we are, and that will be what I show you. If we're not using UAC, then we'll use get credential and start job to do the same thing. But the thing is, start process works on both. So just stick with that one. Now, fundamentally, what we're doing here is simulating what central admin does when we go to manage service applications, create a new UPA. So we have the same requirements here, right? We have to grant logon locally to the farm account in order for this to function. And we but need to be a local machine administrator as well. But we can do that temporarily, sort of, kind of, just for this operation. But we're not actually, you know, humanly logging onto the machine via remote desktop and doing it that way. So here's the solution, and I'll show you this when we get to the demo in a little while. You know, I know it's too, you know, it's too much script to fit on the screen, so I'll make it bigger in the demonstration. Basically, we have two files. At the top, we have an external file with a snippet of PowerShell, which effectively just calls new SP profile service application with the database names and so on that we want. Okay? And then in a different script, we use start process with the run as parameter and some credentials of the farm account. And then we call that other file. Okay? It's a bit of a hack, but it works. Yeah? So let's switch over to the demonstration machine. To remember there's an animation there for no good reason. Okay, so I've got a very simple environment here. Three machines, one running SharePoint, obviously. I've got a domain controller, and I've got a SQL Server. It's, you know, the bare minimum to show these things. Not very kind of realistic, but we want it to actually be able to perform a sync within 75 minutes, right? So we need to try and limit what I can do on this machine. So just give you an overview of the environment. On the domain controller, where are we? Over here. I've got some service accounts. Should be familiar with these. I've got a farm account. I've got a web application pool account. I have a service application endpoint here account. And then I have my UPS account, which I'm going to use when we configure the actual synchronization. Then I've got an organizational unit here called SharePoint users with one group and one user, and then a sub-OU for various countries. So we've got Switzerland, the United Kingdom, which for some reason is GB here. I don't understand that. The British people will be chuckling about that. Then we've got Italy and the United States, of course. And, you know, within these, I've got a bundle of users. And some of these users are members. Not that one, if we do it the easier way. If we look at Fabricam users, you see the members. You know, these people here are in a, you know, selection of those other OUs. Okay, so we've got a group there, and I'll use that to demonstrate a filter later on. Some of the other users, and it's difficult to see, but you see here Ruth Backer, Maureen Bacon, who's Mark Rackley's favorite user in this company. These are disabled users. That's what that little arrow icon there that you can hardly see represents. So they're disabled users. We don't really want them in the profile store. So that's my kind of, you know, enterprise directory, which if your enterprise directory looks like that, could you raise your hand? Is it that sort of simple and refined? A few of you? Excellent. You guys are good. Everybody else? It's a bit more messy than that, right? This is the ideal design, by the way, but yeah, the reality is very different, of course. Let's switch over to the SharePoint machine, just show you what we've got here. We've got a couple of web applications, the intranet, the My Sites. We're not really going to touch on those unless there's questions on it later, but they're there and configured. Got some service applications as well. Already here, I've got an MMS, and I've got a department, a job title, and a location. But you can see there's no data there, right? Nothing else is populated under these term sets. What else have we got to see here before we proceed? Other thing to show you is I've added the farm account to the local machine administrator here, administrators group here, because the next step is to provision, or sorry, is to create the user profile service application. So in order to, you know, perform my workaround, I need that, okay? There's no way else to do it. Just remember, if you make this change, we must restart or simulate the log off and the log on as that account in order for those changes to take place. So what I'm going to do here in PowerShell is just restart the timer service, which of course runs as the farm account, right, which prevents me from having to reboot the machine for that change to take effect. Okay, so I've got my script over here, which is the main thing that's going to do all the work. I'm grabbing an existing application pool by its name, and then I'm setting up, you know, basically what I want the UPA to be called, you know, what I want the databases to be called. I grab that app pool, and then I'm going to use that to create the new profile service application with those settings, and of course its proxy. And then at the end, I'm just grabbing it, and it says there it's going to check it works. It's not guaranteeing it works. It's just, you know, a little thing we can do before proceeding. But I'm not going to run this file directly here, because that will create the UPA as the administrator account, the account that I'm logged on interactively as. So over here, I have another script, and I have this script, which is basically PowerShell, how to add the farm account to the local admins and then restart the service, which I've already done. Here's a reference to that other file on disk. Then I'm going to use getspfarm default service account, which is going to prompt me to enter the password of the farm account. So I'm not storing a password in this file, right? And there's any number of ways I can store it as a secure string and use that and so on and so forth. But we have to deal with another problem, which I'll show you later on with VPS with respect to plain text credentials. And then I call start process to execute a couple of one more PowerShell session. Before I create the UPA, I'm just going to run this guy, and just to prove that I'm not done it already, neither of these two services are started, okay, at present. So the first thing is I'll start the service instance. It doesn't really matter which order you do things in. You know, it's not a technical dependency or anything like that, but as a general practice, always start the service instance before you create a service application, because it just means it's going to be a little bit quicker and you'll be able to manage it immediately rather than having to, you know, wait and, for pauses and so on. So just wait a second whilst this guy starts. If this guy gets stuck on starting, you've got serious problems in your environment. I had this situation with a customer not so long ago where it took me approximately 85 hours to resolve a problem with this guy getting stuck on starting. It's unusual, but that time was, you know, basically a rebuild of the environment. Okay? So that guy started. Obviously, most of that time was finding out what the problem was, right? The fix was relatively straightforward. So we'll create the UPA using this script. So just making sure I haven't made a mistake there. I'm just going to execute that, and it fails miserably. Oh, well, that's the first bit. That's okay. We don't care about that. So the first thing it's doing is it's prompting me for the password of the farm account, and you all know what I'm typing in there. It's a highly secure one. And then the next thing is this user account control dialog. If you are in a UAC environment and you don't see this and you see another prompt, it won't work. It will fail. Okay, so there's something wrong in the script. Obviously, I'm going to approve this. And then basically what's happening now is it's loaded a new session and it's running that snippet to create the service application. And this obviously takes a few moments whilst it creates the databases, configures the settings that we specified and so on in our snippet. Switch over to the database server just so that there's something to look at whilst we're waiting. You see it's created the databases already, and they should be populated by now. Yeah, you saw a bunch of tables in there. but the sync database is empty, okay? Because the sync database isn't populated when we create the service application, it's populated when we provision the user profile sync service. Hopefully that's completed. Yep, cool. Now, one other thing we need to do at this stage is understand something about our directory service. So how many of you here have an environment where it's a single level, a single domain level, like fabricam.com or contoso.com? Yeah, a few of you, but the vast majority haven't got that, right? So if you have a sync, you know, if you have that, we're okay, we don't need to do anything. But if the name has more than one level, we need to configure additional permissions and a setting on the UPA in order to successfully sync. And that's a thing called NetBIOS domain names. So I have a script here that does that. We have to use PowerShell for this because the property NetBIOS domain names enabled is not exposed through central administration or any other way, basically, other than the APIs. So in my case, if we come over here, you know, it's corp.contoso.com, so that isn't matching, so I need to set that property to enable sync. So I'm going to go ahead and run this, which is in the interest of time later on. Okay, and I have a thing here where I just write out so I can see, and I didn't, you know, I used to be a front-end guy, right? I studied graphic design and stuff and did single-pixel GIFs, and then, you know, I ended up doing what I'm doing now, and I lost all of my, you know, artistic capability. So whether it's true or false, it's still green, you know. I just couldn't be bothered. So, you know, here it's validating that that property is set. Now, there's another step I'll need to configure later on. I'm going to switch back to the slides so we can get into the next thing. Basically, it's one long demo, but split up so between the slides. Cool. So switch gears now, talk about Active Directory import. The new mode, or the back to the future mode, if you like, that we have, allows us to do a fast and, you know, easy import from Active Directory. Basically, the objective of having this is to enable customers to get up and running with profile sync and then the scenarios that they enable much more quickly and with much less pain, right? And this targets the most common deployment scenario, that of a single Active Directory forest. You know, it's doing import only. We have broadly the same capabilities that you would expect from previous versions and obviously the UPS stuff in terms of how we can do container selection. But we have to understand it's the other way around from UPS. So our filters in UPS and FIM are exclusion-based. When we're doing Active Directory import, it's an LDAP filter. So it says there on the slide it's inclusion-based, but it's actually an LDAP filter, so it can be either one. But if we, you know, we can't, the implication of this is we can't take what we have in UPS and just use it with AD import, and we can't take what we've got with AD import and just use it with UPS. So that's a very important planning consideration, because the chances are we're going to use this guy to get up and running, and then we're going to move to one of the other options once we've got the bulk of the initial data loaded. So we're limited in terms of a single forest, but we do support multiple domains. The issue here is the more domains you have, the more connections you've got. The more connections you've got, the more property things you have to manage. How many of you here have got more than 20 domains in your environment? A few of you, yeah, okay. So that's the kind of point where it gets to be a management burden. I do have one customer who has 476 domains, okay? Now, yes, that customer needs a domain non-proliferation treaty, okay, but for right now, they need also to worry about how to get that stuff in. So obviously, Active Directory import is not the right tool for them. We support secondary accounts, or what's otherwise known as shadow accounts, for domain and resource and user domain scenarios. We can do custom property mappings, and we support, you know, however the connection for the end user store is done. It says FBA there. That's marketing speak for an LDAP bind. Okay? That's just the same as SharePoint 2010. What we can't do is change the default property mappings. Okay? It's all about getting the information in quickly using the defaults of the product. We still need the replicating directory changes permission in order to get a change log from Active Directory to improve sync performance. Doesn't matter which mode we use, okay? Any of the four options with Active Directory require the same permission. This is a good thing. I know everybody complains about it and says, well, you know, why do we need that? Well, if we don't use it, okay, and we use an alternative approach to sync like what SharePoint 2007 had, it'll take longer. Right? It's more efficient to do this based on a change log than to ignore the change log. Okay? And we have to do it on each domain we're working with. We need the NetBIOS domain names property that I showed you just at the end of the demonstration there. If the NetBIOS name of the domain, in my case, contoso.com, doesn't match the fully qualified name, which is corp.contoso.com. Same as user profile sync. How do we provision it? It's very straightforward, but basically when we create the UPA, our default mode is UPS. Okay, so we just need to go in and configure a setting of the UPA to change it to be using Active Directory import. Now in the UI, it's fine. It's just an option there that says use SharePoint Active Directory import. In PowerShell, we have this beautiful double negative, freaky, confusing thing, which is you set the no ILM used property to true. Okay? ILM is an old acronym for Forefront Identity Manager. And then we must remember to call the update method for that change to take effect. And then we're in AD import mode, and we'll see changes in the rest of the service app management for sync. The good thing about AD import is you never need to start the user profile sync service. Okay, so that's got to be a good thing, right? You're not going to get into any problems starting that guy. But just be careful, because central admin is a generic user interface. You know, it's not really aware of this setting. When you do it quickly and you go straight in and try and create a connection after you've set the property no ILM used, it's going to complain that you can't create a connection because you haven't started the UPS service. Okay? And that's just because the UI there hasn't been changed to take account of the setting. Again, it's one of these things in SharePoint, whereas if you just leave it a little while, try again, it will be okay. Okay, so the quicker you are, sometimes the worse it is, right? It's not all about being quick. As I showed you, the SyncDB is created, but it's empty when we've provisioned the UPA. So there's a database sitting there, right? And we get a common question is, okay, well, how do we provide business continuity management for that database? Okay? Well, it's an empty database. If you really want to spend time and money doing stuff with that, go for it. But it's not important. Okay, how do we script connections? That's something else that's very frequently requested. So we have some commandlets which are related to SP profile sync connection. These are allowed when we're in Active Directory import mode for creating connections. But it's not really what they're for. It will work, but you have to understand the limitations of this, right? So if they're fine for creating them, no problem at all. But if you then remove the one that you previously created, it doesn't remove it at all. It just deletes the objects that you created in the context earlier. There is a fix for it, but you know, you have to remember these commandlets were not really designed for this purpose. It's just something that we can use to speed things up a little bit. Some limitations of AD import. We can't do cross-forest contact resolution because we can't do cross-forest. We can't change the mapping of system properties, so all of the properties that start SPS dash, we can't configure those. We can't do BDC augmentation to get in extra data from line of business systems. We can't do kind of type switching, which is something that we can do in FIM. One of these things, You probably shouldn't do it, but in certain scenarios, it's the only possible way to achieve the end result without doing a significant amount of change on the directory services side. And it's, you know, the power of flexibility that we have in FIM if we really needed to go down that road, so we can't do that. Similarly, another thing that probably strikes you as being completely crazy, but having two different attributes in AD going into the same property, we can't do that either. But that's something that a lot of customers need to do because they're not in a position to be able to make changes of this magnitude to the directory system. You know, they've got some legacy there that they need to deal with. So all of those types of things are things that drive us towards the other mode, right, the UPS mode. Our LDAP query filters allow us to constrain the objects that we're going to import. It gives us maximum flexibility, okay, because it's just a LDAP query. The problem with this power is you need to understand the implications of using a poor LDAP query, right? This could really slow down sync operations. We've got this nice UI that gives us IntelliSense and color coding. You can see the filter really well. You know, you can validate it. You've just got this little text box, right? So you need to create the filter in another tool, which I'll show you, and then copy and paste it in here at the very bottom of the slide. I know it's small. I'll make it bigger later. It's quite cool that we have a checkbox to filter out disabled users. So if that's what we had a filter for previously, we don't need a new LDAP query string. We just check the tick box, we're golden. We don't get any of our disabled users come through. Remember, they're inclusion-based by default. But the way to work around that is to simply, you know, add an exclamation mark at the start of the query to make it an exclusion-based query. You want to validate your filters before you copy and paste them into that text box and hit OK. You know, because a lot of the time when you're working with filters, you get unexpected results. If you've got a small number of users, it's no problem. You can identify that it's, you know, not doing what you want, go back, change the query. But if you're importing 250,000 users, you want to be sure that your filter is right and functioning and selecting the right objects before you do that initial sync, because it might take 2 days. Do you want to have to then throw that all away and do another 2 days? If you're in a situation I frequently find myself in where my customer has got a deadline, right, that they are in no circumstances whatsoever willing to change, and you've got lots of things to get done, you know, things fall through the gaps. That's the kind of thing that can kill a project delivery. Again, just because you can doesn't mean you should. There's lots of examples of LDAP queries on the internet, right? And we all know that whatever you read on the internet must be true and must be good, right? A lot of these things are very dangerous, right? They work great on my laptop with 1,000 users. It might not work so great with 250,000 users. Also be aware that we need a full import to perform a full import rather than an incremental import whenever we make a configuration change to our filter, to the root of the search for the filter, like the base container, and any property mappings, custom property mappings we add. Okay? And when we do a full import, we need to also run this PowerShell to purge the objects that may have been previously part of the import, but we've updated the configuration, and so therefore they should no longer be part of the configuration. If we don't run this purge operation, they will remain in the profile store, and that's not what we want. So the first thing we do is we call, this is just poor PowerShell, but it's what it is, it's what we have. We're going to call set SP profile service application and then pass in the get non-imported objects switch there. That gives us a list of the users to purge. And then if we want to actually purge them, we pass in purge non-imported objects. So let's switch to the demo and see how we get on with time with Active Directory import. So obviously the machine is in the same state as we were at the end of the last demonstration. What I need to do is switch the mode to Active Directory import. So I'm going to go into service applications. And this is the point at which, if it blows up, I'm in trouble. I'm going to go to the UPA. Way! It's always good when that happens. Now, you know, everything here is as we would be familiar with SharePoint 2010. I'm going to go to the Configure Synchronization Settings link, and here's our option to change the mode. Okay, so this is the no ILM used property. I'm going to select that and click OK. That's changed the mode, and I'm going to try and do this very quickly. It works, and it's because I wasn't quick enough. But if if it's earlier in the week and you haven't, had so many late nights, you do it really quick, it'll prop up and tell you you can't create the connection yet because you haven't started the UPS, and it's just you just need to wait for the delay. If we go back to the PowerShell and run our little red and green check here, you can see now, whoa. I hide. That's pretty impressive that it lasted that long. That's excellent. That's the only time I've had a beneficial modern UI notification on Windows Server. So, touch is not just for client computers. You can see that property is now true, okay? So I could have done it with the PowerShell up here, just uncomment this and update it, but the UI works as well, of course. So I'm going to create a connection. I'm just going to call it SharePoint Users. This is one of the problems we face is we're using this generic UI, right? And so we have things like this. It's a combo box with one option, right? My fully qualified name is corp.contoso.com. Oops. I have my authentication types, as mentioned on the slide. They all work. But I'm going to use Windows Authentication because it's the only one it's sensible to use in this scenario. And I'm going to do this using SPUPS, I believe, is the account in Active Directory. I've spent all week working in a different environment called Fabricam, so I'm having a hard time remembering the accounts and so on. I'm going to choose to filter out disabled users by checking this tick box. I also have an LDAP filter, an LDAP query. I should stop calling them filters, they're queries. And basically what I'm doing here is I'm selecting all the objects that are of class user, and then I've got the distinguished name here of my Fabricam users group that we saw earlier on Active Directory. And the exclamation mark means what I'm going to do here is I'm going to import every user except the people that are in that group, okay? So I'm going to copy and paste this into here, which is what I told you not to do. So how do we, I know that that's correct. Well, I pray it's correct, but I've run this a few times before, so we should be good. But how do we build and validate that query? We can do that in a tool called ADSI Edit, which is available on every Windows Server box that's running AD, and I think it's part of the optional management tools. You see, that's the query. This is the result of that query from my AD here, and you can see that these are all the users. How do we do that? It's basically we come in here, we connect to our default context, we right-click this guy, we do new query, we give it a name, test 2. We give it a root of the search, so we select an object in the hierarchy where we want to start the search. I'm going to choose SharePoint users. And then we come along here and we can edit the query, and we can use this guy to build the query based on all the properties available to us and so on. Or we can copy and paste the query in here. If we got it off the internet and we want to time how long it takes, right? You can go there, ding dong, and it's running. You see it's got a little egg timer here. Say it's still processing, okay? I have quite a lot of users here. I'm not sure how many users exactly we have. Let's find out. Give us an indication of how long this is going to take. Just got a little script here that goes through my OUs and outputs how many are in each. So 400-odd in UK, 300-odd. It's about 1,000, I think. Oh, a fair bit more. So about 2,000, 1,800, something like that. Okay, so I know my filter's good. I'm going to choose populate containers here, and I'm going to select that same root, OU, the SharePoint users OU. never press this button, okay? This is one of the most dangerous buttons in the entire product. You know all those test accounts you've got in your AD and all the accounts for junk? Yeah, you don't want that stuff. Click OK. See how quick that was? It didn't even work on it. I couldn't get, you know, it wasn't quick enough for me to stop the animation. Right? That's how quick it was. That's a big, you know, improvement over what we have with UPS. And you can see there's our connection. We still have this, right? But because we're in AD import mode, we can't use it, and it warns us appropriately there. I'm refreshing the page here. I'm hitting F5. And eventually, within 5 minutes, it's going to kick off the sync. I'm going to speed that up a bit by starting it. And this isn't going to work, okay? And you can see that it's actually running now, but it's going to fail miserably. The reason it's going to fail miserably is I haven't provided the sync account with replicating directory changes permissions. If I open up the ULS, and I'm going to filter this for user profiles, just to go, I'm going to spell it properly first. Just get rid of some of the junk. You can see these entries here. This DearSync scan is failing, and it's just going to keep looping through here now until I provide it with replicating directory changes. So you can see here, this is an example of the increased logging and reporting available to infrastructure folk to, in order to you know, see what's going on with the product. So I'm going to go ahead and phone my AD guy and say, hey, man, can I have replicating directory changes? And my AD guy is going to say, no. And I'm going to say, but I really need it. And then I'm going to, you know, engage one of my stakeholders to win that argument for me. And then I'm going to go back to him and say, yep, this guy says do it. And the guy's going to say, what's replicating directory changes? Right? And then 3 weeks later, we get it sorted out. One tip here is you can run a script basically to find out whether they've done it or not. Because part of that three-week process is you send in the mail saying, can I have it? 2 weeks later, you get the response, yep, we've done that service ticket, everything's good. And you try it, and it doesn't work, right? Because it might have been done on the wrong account, or maybe it hasn't been done at all, or whatever. So this little script, which I'll just run, basically checks that for me, and it's telling me here that you know I don't have replicating directory changes on the domain or the configuration partition. So I need to grant those, and I can use similar script to grant them as well, right? It's fairly straightforward PowerShell stuff. If you want this type of scripts, you'll find them on my blog about 2 days after the conference. So I'll do it in the UI just so we can see this. We can do it in the Active Directory users and computers in one of two ways. Perhaps the easiest way is the delegate control wizard, and I just like showing it because you know even AD people need wizards, right? But it's not quite as bad as the farm configuration one, so we're good. We add in our account. We choose create a custom task to delegate. We do it on this. It calls it a folder, but this is the top of the tree, basically throughout the domain. The common question is, can we do this on a specific OU? No, it has to be the domain level because that's where the change log is scoped. Okay? And then this is the screen where we select replicating directory changes, or what's commonly referred to as DearSync permissions, which is Techno's babble for this permission set. Okay. Do next, finish, that's it, it's done. If we're in advanced view mode of ADUC, bring up the properties, go to security, you can see there's our account, and there's its replicating directory changes permission. So if we do it that way as well, which is how we effectively do the scripting of it in PowerShell, that's what we're checking. We also need to do it on the configuration partition. That's not exposed via ADUC. Again, we need to use ADSI edit. This time we're going to connect to, instead of the default naming context, we're going to choose the configuration partition or configuration context. Click OK. We need to do it on the root object. Bring up the properties, go to security, add the user. Give it replicating directory changes. Apply that. Now we should be good. I'm going to run this script again. hopefully I see, oops, I see green, so you know, so my front end kind of guy skills worked on this script. Oops, sorry, wrong place. Come back over here, start profile sync. See, it had 130. It didn't even need to click start because it's just retrying and retrying and retrying. Yeah? And you see how quickly the profiles are coming in. 260, 265, 270, 280, etc. up here in the top. Ooh. So I'm going to leave this running and switch back to the slides, but it's already way quicker than what we have with UPS, right? We'd have like 20 users by now if it was UPS. Okay, so let's switch gears, talk about user profile sync, and I have to speed up even more, but luckily for this, there's not too many slides before we can get back to the demo. Again, the goal primarily is to reduce, even though we're switching modes and we're now talking about UPS, we want to improve the import time, right? From approximately 2 weeks to a couple of days, a little bit more for large directories. We've achieved that by a number of different small things, none of which are particularly interesting on their own, but combined together give us drastically improved profile sync performance. Don't really want to speak too much in detail to any of these because we can go down a rabbit hole as to why it's bad and so on and so forth, and we'll never get to the end of the session. But a good way of demonstrating that is we also changed the approach to provisioning inside the Forefront Identity Manager piece and eliminated what are effectively pointless processes as far as getting data into SharePoint is concerned. You see at the top there is SharePoint 2010 with our 6 phases, and with SharePoint 2013 we have 3. Also, the management agent that is built and delivered by SharePoint when we provision UPS is completely re-implemented. Okay? It's still an extensible connectivity management agent, but it's a much better one. Otherwise, in terms of operational service management, starting the service instance, other operations, everything is identical to how it was with SharePoint 2010. No feature improvements, no regressions, everything is identical. Obviously, the build of FIM from time to time changes as we apply certain SharePoint updates, but as far as operational management is concerned, we're in the same boat. How do we provision UPS with Windows PowerShell? Again, sample here, which is available already on my blog, where we're basically simulating starting the service instance. Now, of course, the service instance we're dealing with here isn't really a SharePoint service instance. It's an external piece of software which has kind of been packaged and bundled up with SharePoint. And so it's not just as simple as starting the service instance. We have to basically input the information that we would see in central admin. And I'll talk about that a little bit in the demonstration as well. This is where we get into problems with plain text passwords, because when we call set synchronization machine, which is line 21 here, we have to pass in a plain text password. Okay? It's not particularly good security engineering, but it is what it is, so we have to deal with that. So I don't want to store that in my text file anywhere, right? It's one thing to pass it in during this operation, it's another thing to store it. So I'm using marshalling to get the plain text credentials. So I can run this without having to know the password, because I still need to log on with permissions on SharePoint to start the service instance, of course. Sync behavior is identical to AD with respect, if we make a configuration change, adding, removing OU, changing the filters, etc., we must run a full import. And then we need to do the purge to remove the objects that were previously imported, which we may want to have excluded with the change to the configuration that we made. Okay, I'm going to switch back to the demo, have a quick look at some of these things. It's likely, highly likely, that the previous import hasn't finished, but let's see how we're getting on. Oh, we're nearly there. Oh, it's idle. So we have 1694, but we don't, right? We have more than that. You saw the counts earlier on the domain controller. That's because we haven't imported some of the users in that group. Let's just double check that. Find our user, or our group, I'm sorry. See who's a member of that. So we have a user here, Tom Connor. Let's see if we can find Tom. So he's not in there. Find Tom. There's plenty of Toms, but no Tom Connor. So we can validate, you know, just quickly, a little quick check to make sure that our filters worked. Okay. Similarly, our disabled users won't show up. Okay. So now I want to switch to user profile sync. It's fairly straightforward. I'm going to go back to my UPA, go to my sync settings. But you notice how these boxes are grayed out at the top here, because they're not applicable to us when we're in AD import mode. Choose user profile sync. Click OK. Now I need to start the service instance. That's where we get some fun and games, usually, OK? Here's my script that starts the user profile sync service instance, the one we saw on the screen. So I'm going to go ahead and run that. It's asking me for the credentials, because I don't want to store it. And we now have to, you know, pray, basically. OK? Going to give up my ULS, filter out the things that we don't necessarily care about so much. And it takes a minute before anything will happen, okay? The reason it takes a minute before it happens is we have a job definition called the profile sync. It's not going to work. Yes, it will work. Sorry, we already gave it admin permissions. There's a timer job called the profile synchronization setup job, which is a one-time timer job, which is created when we run that PowerShell or click start in services on server. We have to wait a minute before that will execute. Okay. Now you can see that it started. These are the stages that we're going through. Basically, what's happening here is it's a bit like we'd, you know, when we install SharePoint, we're just effectively putting, you know, bits on the box. When we create the farm, we do registry key settings and file system ACLs and so on and so forth. Okay? But we don't do anything with these components, right? The forefront identity management components. So this, what these different stages, is effectively doing the same thing that the install wizard for forefront identity manager would do with our desired SharePoint configuration. So we're building databases, starting services, changing security policy, opening firewall ports, right? This is the reason we need to be a local admin to do this. It's not a bad thing that this has to run as a local admin, okay? Because this is what it needs to do. We can see the implications of that over on the SQL Server. If we refresh our SyncDB, which remember before was empty, okay? Refresh that guy, now we've got a bundle of tables in there, and so on. And for those interested in things, if we bring up the properties of this guy, sorry, I'm in the wrong place. If we go to the users of this database, we don't have our farm account in there, right? Which is what we're looking for. That's the kind of the bug that prevents us from doing this without the workaround. It says it's finished. One thing to watch out for is in the past, a lot of people used to say, if you see that, that's the number that we're looking for there, right? 9I1U, okay? If you see that, it's successful. That's not true, okay? Because you get the same event if it failed, okay? Yeah? So searching for that is giving you full sense of security, let's just put it that way. So if you see people posting that, you know, on Facebook and Twitter, it doesn't mean that they're the god of UPS. It just means that it might have worked, it might not have. Come back over here, refresh the UPA screen. We should be good. How long have we got left? 10 minutes. I'll cut the demo a little bit short so that we can get the rest of the content in a few minutes. While we're waiting, this is actually really useful if we want to do a validation check before we attempt to start the service instance. In our case, we knew the farm account was a local admin because we needed that to create the UPA in the first place, right? We did that in the very first step. But again, if that's something that you have to ask somebody else to do before you can proceed, we can run this health analyzer rule, and if we get a warning, we know we're good, okay, to proceed. Now, I know it's the wrong way around, but it's actually useful to us, yeah? So if we run this and it tells us that our configuration is messed up, we're actually good to proceed. Now, I've got an error here, which is not unusual. Something went wrong. Don't understand where the shortcut went, so I don't want to do that. I want to come over here. Check my services on server. Just want to double check that it did actually succeed. Says it did. Come back over here, try again. Something's not happy. It's basically provisioning stuff still behind the scenes. Even though the status is that it started and my PowerShell is completed, there's still work going on. The lesson really is if you want it to always work first time, don't do it the way Spence does it on stage, okay? And try and do it in a more calm, methodical fashion. I'm going to fix this hopefully by doing everybody's favorite command. We've long desired at SharePoint conferences for there to be a bell, you know, that's piped through the PA of the system. And you know, every time somebody on stage does an IIS reset, a bell goes off. And, you know, whichever conference has the most, you know, gets a prize or whatever. But obviously, the bigger conferences, it's difficult to do stuff like that. I'm going to flip back to the slides because obviously now we have to wait for the just-in-time compiler to catch up. Interesting. Okay, switching modes. We can go from AD import to user profile sync by changing the property, the same thing that I did here. That's the idea, right? The intention is we use AD import, get the bulk of the users in, then move to UPS. It's not designed to keep going backwards and forwards, okay? There's literally dozens of bugs and issues you will hit if you can't make up your mind as to which mode you want to be in, right? It's kind of a one-way deal. Yeah, I mean, technically you can go back, but you're going to have to do a bunch of cleanup work to purge imported objects, okay? So it's really a one-way kind of thing. Also, bear in mind that when we're using AD import, we created a connection that's stored in the profile database. When we're in user profile sync mode, and it's back now, you know, when we go and have a look at it, there won't be any connection because those guys' connections are stored in the sync DB. Okay? So we can't migrate the existing work that we did. We need to replicate using user profile sync mode. Property mapping and filters, similarly, are not moved. Switching modes, just sum this up. You really have to plan this out, like plan out when it's going to take place, understand the constraints, and make sure that you document the configuration so that you can then plan and implement the way you're going to achieve the same results as you had in the previous mode. And remember to review and purge the non-imported objects, otherwise you'll be thinking, hang on, that object shouldn't be in there, that user shouldn't be there, they're disabled or whatever, but it's still hanging around from the previous import. Because you can't, it's not 100% fidelity. You can't do exactly the same thing across both modes. External Identity Manager. We're running out of time, so I'm trying to speed up. Basically, this is now supported. In SharePoint 2010, we had the option in the UI, but if you clicked it, you were unsupported. Now it's supported, and there is the delivery capability as well. Okay? So you can use custom code or the SharePoint connector for Forefront Identity Manager to enable this scenario. If you do use custom code, please use the .NET framework. Please do not use legacy implementations of ADSI and so on. So what's this SharePoint connector thing all about? Well, it's basically a management agent for Forefront Identity Manager. Management agents are things that we install not on the source directory system, but in the on the meta directory product, and allows us to connect to external data systems and synchronize their information. Reasons to use this: we're basically talking about decoupling Profile Sync away from SharePoint. If you think about Workflow Manager in this release, workflow's been taken out of the timer process in SharePoint and moved to an independent system, which allows us to scale them independently. It allows us to provide HA and DR for them independently. It makes it a more scalable solution. The other primary reason to use an external identity manager solution like this is we have the ultimate flexibility in terms of the types of systems we can connect to. You know, if we want to connect to Acme Identity Store, it's likely that you can buy or build a connector for the Acme Identity Store. Okay? You're only limited basically by budget here. So if you're a large corporation, you already have an investment in FIM, you can leverage that. You might want to move towards that world. This is, you know, the place to be. If you have an existing investment in, you know, people that manage FIM, you no longer have to get into the argument about, well, why are you doing that in SharePoint? SharePoint isn't an identity management solution. SharePoint's the thing that needs an identity management solution. So a lot of good reasons to use it, but they also have counterpoints, right? Because you do need to know quite a lot about Forefront Identity Manager. So how does it kind of, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going two slides ahead. It's an external download. We support SharePoint 2013 now. We don't yet support SharePoint 2010. It works, but we still need to do more testing there. These are important prerequisites. We must be on a specific build of Forefront Identity Manager. It's Forefront Identity Manager 2010 R2 Service Pack 1. Deep breath. And when you download the connector, there's also an additional patch to the FIM in there. We're going to have to configure everything that's configured for us in SharePoint by the system ourselves. That means we need to know about FIM. Chances are you're not going to be able to migrate what you have now in the user profile sync store, so you need to kind of go back and do that initial import. So let's compare how profile import with SharePoint works, right? If we have FIM in play. This is our scenario. We have Exchange, Active Directory, SharePoint, and a HR database. Basically, we can choose to have our HR database be our authoritative kind of start point. So when a new hire starts, you know, we fill in a bunch of details, and we want to, you know, create them an account in AD. We want to have them have a mailbox in Exchange. We want them to have, you know, data in other systems. And this is what this enables. And you'll notice that FIM, you know, if we don't have FIM, if we don't use External Identity Manager, sorry, if we're using User Profile Sync, we end up with two metaverses, right? We've got the purple box in the middle, and then we've got another one in green. So we're doing two things. Basically, in this scenario, we have to push it through, make it into AD, and then sync from AD. And we have to deal with all of the operational challenges of running UPS. So if we contrast that with going to External Identity Manager using the SharePoint connector, we remove the green box. Okay? So that's good, but there's always a drawback, right? It's, you know, additional cost, right? Additional servers, additional software licensing, additional skills requirement. We're also going to have to do certain things slightly differently. So if we're dealing with photos for the users, you know, we're going to have to make sure that we have some way of coordinating the work that happens in FIM and then the things that happen in SharePoint that are specific to SharePoint. There's actually a better solution for pictures, which was published recently across all of the products. There's four different ways we can do that as well with FIM. So, you know, we have to make choices there. So it's, you know, significant FIM expertise is necessary, whether you've got to skill up or hire it in. We do have some, you know, very detailed guidance for different scenarios coming very soon. There's lots of different things we can do with this. It's not just this, right? This is one example scenario. You could just use it to just do direct sync like we have with UPS, but instead of it being, you know, the one with SharePoint, it's using FIM. So that's an option as well. Okay, I'm going to flip back to the demo very briefly. I won't keep you past the cutoff time for more than about 5 minutes. I'm refreshing the page. You see we're back now. You know, if we go ahead to try and create a connection, you know, the old one that I had before isn't there. I can go ahead and create a new connection. You see now I have, we now have our different systems that we can speak to as you would expect. Obviously, we've run out of time. It doesn't matter how many times you do this, unless the session is just one long demo the whole way, which I'm not allowed to do or have been told is not what people want, that's the only way to do everything and have it go end to end. But I would have, the intention was, you know, switch it to UPS, configure the connection, bring it through, do the purge of the non-imported objects and so on. Obviously, if you want to see that, you can check the sort of procedure out, obviously, on the blog. Switch back over to the slides again. Keep pressing that button. Okay, just to wrap up and finally let you get out of here. We need to plan. Sometimes I get told off for this, and then I get somebody else comes up and says, that was the best slide of the entire conference. We need to think this stuff through, understand everything, and do a lot of planning. Right? If we don't plan this, we're going to have to go back. The poor man always pays twice, and it's never more true than with profile synchronization or any identity management piece. Remember, if the stuff in our Active Directory is a mess, we're going to have a mess in SharePoint, right? It's a fundamental reality, and it will impact all of the features that we want to leverage. If we have a poor Active Directory hygiene in terms of, the memory in the servers, the availability, the network connections, and so on, or indeed we have, 476 domains, that's going to cause us problems, and there's nothing SharePoint can do directly to help us. Also, be aware if the Active Directory is outsourced, or directory service management, I should say, is outsourced. These are the reasons why that planning has so much impact. So what mode should you use? The answer is, of course, every consultant's favorite answer, it depends. Write me a check. I'll tell you what I already know. Okay? But it's true. It does depend, right? It depends on your scenario. It depends on your business. It depends on your IT maturity. It depends on what type of directories you have in your organization and how they're managed. The general idea is if you're a small, mid-sized company, you don't have anything but Active Directory, you don't care about export, you just want it something to be fast, you like the defaults of SharePoint in terms of property mappings, you're golden. That's Active Directory import. The other reason to use that is to get the vast majority of the data in quickly and then switch to another mode. Profile sync, small to mid, it doesn't really matter what the size of the company is, to be honest. If you already have somebody else's identity solution, this is the approach because your Active Directory is the point to which you want to sync. But if you need multiple forests, support, then UPS is perhaps the best option. Additional data systems, but we are limited. It all comes down to an operational service management decision. Do you want to manage profile sync as part of the SharePoint operational service management, or do you want to have it be decoupled? Okay? Large organizations currently have FIM, then the external FIM is definitely the right call. If you want ultimate flexibility, you want to speak to systems that the SharePoint version doesn't speak to, that's the call for you. The benefits of decoupling cannot be underestimated in terms of HA, DR, performance, and security. So with that, I know I've gone over by 5 minutes. It's inevitable that this session overruns. Thanks very much for those of you who stayed. I hope you've enjoyed SharePoint Conference. How many of you are going to the post-con? Okay, a few of you. That will be first rate, the one on the hybrid delivered by Steve and Bill. Thanks very much. Enjoy your journey home as much as you can.